If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Carrie Peck is that elder law attorney we talk about once in a while. In fact, he joins us now from the Peck Ritchie Law Firm to answer some questions about wills, estate plans, trust, powers of attorney, the quibbling you're doing with your siblings and whatnot. Hey, Carrie, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good, John. Good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Hey, I have a, you know, whenever you come on, since you know my parents are very old and my dad has dementia, my mom doesn't. Every now and then, my dad has flashes of lucidity. He's lucid. I mean, like he's very engaged and his memory is strong. And then other times, he doesn't remember what he had for lunch. That's the state of his mind. And he's had a nice life and he's generally pretty content. But he did get a letter the other day, Carrie, and it said that because of his diagnosis of dementia, that the Veteran Affairs Office wants to appoint somebody to oversee his finances and an advocate, but we are helping manage his finances, and my mom is competent. I wonder if you've heard of that sort of thing, and what does that notice from the VA mean?
Well, regrettably, John, I have not heard of it. I don't know why the VA would stick their nose where it doesn't belong. You know, as your dad has a loving family, but you have powers of attorney. You're managing his finances, his health care, and I'm not familiar with it. So I assume that he must receive a VA pension of some kind.
He does, yeah.
To want to get into that.
Yeah, right. So maybe they think if they're giving him money, they should help be better stewards of it. I mean, I get that. My expectation, Carrie, is that we're going to have a conversation with somebody somewhere sometime soon. And when they realize that we are on task, that they're not going to stick their nose in it any further. If not, I'll be calling you.
I was going to say, I'm happy to get involved and help you out, John. I think that's something that, you know, we should do. And I'd be happy to do it for you and your family pro bono.
Well, and that's not why I brought it up, Carrie. That's nice of you. But I'm just wondering if other people in that situation experience that sort of thing and what would or should happen. But how do you demonstrate that you are the appropriate person to manage somebody else's financial affairs? What's the document that you need?
You need, in Illinois, we have two types of powers of attorney, and they're called durable powers of attorney, which mean that they basically continue when you're no longer competent. But while you're competent, and I'm going to say it again on purpose, while you're competent, you can sign one of two or both. Most people sign both. We recommend you sign both a power of attorney for property, which is management of assets, and a power of attorney for health care. And while you're competent, you can decide to name, I decide perhaps to name you as my agent to manage my assets and to manage my health care when I'm no longer capable of managing it for myself. So those are the premier documents here in Illinois, and I would encourage all of your listeners to get those documents. Some people don't address the issue until they get dragged into the emergency room, and then the hospital has a form and says, you know, who do you want? And they're doing it under exigent circumstances. So it's a very important decision, and I encourage people to do it in a calculated, you know, reasonable, rational fashion.
Did I ask you, speaking of when you're suddenly in the hospital, and it might be because you're there at any age, so maybe it doesn't matter if you're 20 or 70 or 100, we should all be thinking along these lines. Maybe you and I did talk about this last time you visited with us, but I was watching an episode of a TV show where the family is standing over an elderly person who's going to die soon, and they have a DNR, but the adult daughter doesn't want them to take the father off life support. She wants him to hang on as long as possible. She's hoping for a miracle. The doctor advises her that this is only going to assure that this person is going to suffer with a tube down their throat, and it's extraordinarily unlikely that any good is going to come of this. And the guy has a DNR, but it seemed like they were deferring to the daughter about the care of her father. talk to me about that situation. Does that happen in real life, and whose opinion, whose opinion counts?
It does happen in real life, but the way to avoid it is that one of the very important components and questions on an Illinois durable power of attorney for health care is, do you want the quantity of your life to be as long as humanly possible, or the quality of your life? And so quantity versus quality is really the analysis in the durable power of attorney. In general, people today are not signing DNR orders, but they are signing powers of attorney that say, I want the quality of my life to be taken into account versus the quantity. And the agent, again, in our hypothetical, if you're my agent and I decide that the quality of my life is more important than the quantity, then you're 100% empowered to remove that life support upon the advice of a doctor.
Okay, but the flip is true too then. Because I'm a third person here, I'm looking at that, I'm going, this guy has no quality of life now and probably won't afterwards, even if they recover. But the daughter is judging that she wants that person to stay alive, and she must think that that will be a good thing, that there's some quality to that. I don't know, Carrie, it seems to me like I ought to sign a DNR because I do not want to live long if I'm not living well.
Well, I agree with that. Some circumstances like this end up in the courtroom in which the daughter hypothetically seeks an order appointing her as guardian to make decisions, trumping the power of attorney. And I've litigated a considerable number of right-to-die cases and end-of-life cases. And you know, as you would expect, they're very, very ugly, but they usually turn on both medical evidence and the ill person's stated intentions while they were competent. And so this is really, John, you've hit it on the head here. This is why your listeners must plan in advance, regardless of age. They can get in a critical car accident at the age of 20, as you pointed out, or the age of 60 or 70, be critically ill. So planning for these circumstances is really imperative at all stages of life. And again, without the pressure of, you know, an emergency room scenario in which, yeah, should we do the surgery now or should we hold off?
Well, you said guardian and power of attorney for medical purposes. Those are different things?
They are different. Guardian is a court-ordered determination as to whether an individual is totally or partially incapable of making financial and or health care decisions. This is in Cook County. We hear these cases every day. We appear on them every day on behalf of clients in what's called the probate court. And the probate court has approximately 6 guardianship judges to just make determinations. And it's not just, it's a very important determination amongst the most important courtrooms in the system. Can mom or dad make decisions for themselves? Are they competent? And in large measure, this turns in a big way on medical evidence. The law requires that a physician write a report stating whether or not John Williams is totally or partially or incapable of making his or her financial and, mm-hmm, and medical decisions. Power of attorney is a document that avoids guardianship 99.9% of the time. Power of attorney is you sit down with a lawyer in their office, and the question is, who do you name to make decisions when you're not capable, and when do you want that to become effective, immediately or at some future point? And again, quantity over quality of medical, of life, length of life, and the alternative. Power of attorney for property is management of assets. Who's going to take care of my assets when I can't take care of them myself?
I understand that. Our number is 312-981-7200, and we'll answer your questions here in a minute, too. Please call in or text right now if you've got a question along these lines. This is Carrie Peck, the elder law attorney. But just back for a minute then, Carrie. So we've avoided guardianship because, say, in this hypothetical, the daughter has been given power of attorney. When the father was competent, he ceded to his daughter power of attorney for medical decisions. So there we don't have to go to guardianship, right? We have her making the decisions on his behalf. And she, I think, is making a bad decision. And her brother, who is around her age too, another adult here, doesn't think that the dad should be kept alive. He doesn't want to be kept alive, and he's going to have a terrible quality of life. But the sister holds all the cards.
Well, in that case, John, the brother, if he wishes, can go to court, in guardianship court, and assert that that power of attorney was executed when Dan wasn't competent, or the sister unduly influenced him to sign that
okay.
power of attorney.
Okay, but maybe none of that's true. But this lady is just making a bad decision. You know, the dad put his chip on the wrong square. He ceded this to a daughter because he thought she would look out for him, but now she's having this attack of anxiety, and she can't pull the trigger on the thing. So does the brother have any recourse then?
Well, I think the brother would likely go to court and assert that Dad, when he was competent, intended to pick the issue of quantity versus quality
versus
over quantity.
Yeah. And would a judge then maybe see it that way? I mean, is that a recourse? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but you're going to need some evidence. You're going to need some other people in the room. Maybe the doctor, the drafting lawyers, maybe the witnesses. Don't forget, these documents require two witnesses. So those witnesses are often important in a courtroom setting where they testify to the judge what that individual said and did at that point in time.
Well, I think if the doctor said what I described, this is going to be painful. He's going to be in and out of consciousness, and he's not going to have any quality of life thereafter, you know. That would be compelling to a judge, right?
I agree. Absolutely.
We're visiting with elder law attorney Carrie Peck, and as always, when he comes on, the phone lines are lit up. And lots of text messages for you, too. Carrie, can you take some questions?
Absolutely.
About that scenario we were describing where maybe dad is not going to recover and the adult children are disagreeing about what care he should get. 630 says, John, ICU nurse here. Rescinding of DNR happens all of the time, capital letters, by family members. So, and you're not surprised to hear that either, are you, Carrie?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, nobody wants to watch their parents die, and you know, but my view would be nobody wants to watch their parent die in pain. So
I'm going to be more adamant. I don't know that Brendan and I've had this conversation with our kids, but I know how I feel about that. I don't know that I've told them. I've got a document, but maybe I should express this to them personally, verbally, huh, Carrie?
I think it's a good idea to talk with your family about your intentions. Absolutely.
Is a will needed if you have a revocable living trust, says 773?
Yes. In Illinois, we use both what's called a pour-over will. It won't be in the title, but that's what it is. It means it pours over any of your assets that are not funded and put into the trust. An asset that's in the trust has a title changed. It says the John Williams Revocable Living Trust, dated January 29th, 2025. And assets that are not in the trust need to pass into that trust by a will. So you must have a will and a trust.
Robert has a question for you. You're on WGN. Robert, go ahead.
Oh, hello, John. Hello, Carrie. So my question is, I've been leaning towards a payable on death type of a instrument. And if I get one of these instruments, where do I put it? With my will in my desk drawer so that my heirs can have ability to see it when I pass?
Yes, the answer, and let's explain that to our other listeners, Robert. A payable on death means that it's in John's name alone, and it passes to Brenda upon his death. So, yes, you want that payable on death document with your will and with your powers of attorney, hopefully, that you have, and you want to tell your family where it is, okay? very important that the family find your original will after you pass, as well as obviously your POD, your payable on death document, so that the property can be or assets distributed the way you want.
815 says, I've been taking care of my 98-year-old father in my home for 2 years, and I have reached the end of my rope. I cannot manage to do it any longer. Can I legally move him into assisted living senior home, even if he resists it? He has plenty of money to live in a nice place.
Well, I think that the circumstances are such that you probably want to go into court and be appointed guardian for your father, so that you have the authority to do that. You might be already, we don't know, agent under power of attorney. You need to talk to the facilities that are interested, that you're interested in
going
to.
This call will be recorded.
This call
is no longer being recorded.
Carrie, you're still there, right? And I don't know where that sound is coming from. You got me, Carrie?
Yeah, I have you. I'm sorry, John. I don't know either.
Okay, fair enough. But it sounds like in the case of this 98-year-old, he doesn't want to go. He's living with his daughter. Legally, the daughter does not have an obligation to continue to care for her father on a daily basis, right?
She does not. Obviously, most families will do that. If he's got adequate funds, then I don't think she should, you know, hesitate to try and put him into a facility that is appropriate for him. But, you know, I think that she probably wants to go in and have herself appointed guardian so that she can make those decisions under court supervision.
Well, but that would require his cooperation, and it sounds like maybe he doesn't want to give her that power.
Well, he may not cooperate at all, but the question is he capable of making his decisions at this point? We haven't talked about that. She's reported that she can't handle it anymore, and he's got adequate money to go into a facility.
Right.
The question is, what's his mental state?
Well, and by the way, if she just plays hardball and says, well, guess what? I'm closing the door on you. You're not going to live in this house anymore. He has to go somewhere. So with or without the power of attorney, boy, that's an awful way to treat your 98-year-old dad. But, I mean, she's at her rope's end. She can't do it. If he's 98, she may be 78. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And what we also don't know is, are there other siblings that they haven't been helping, that they have, you know, where they're at on it? They want dad to go, they don't want dad to go, and so forth. So there's a lot of moving parts there. But I think if she's going to try and place him even against his will, we need to focus, first of all, what's his mental state? Is he capable of making decisions?
Yeah.
Obviously, at 98, a lot of people are not, but there are some.
815 says, we've been talking about all these documents and whatnot. What kind of lawyer is needed to make these documents? I think I know what Carrie's going to say, and I will be. I'll give you his. I would suggest an elder law attorney who deals almost exclusively with these sorts of things. In just a minute, stay tuned. Get your number two pencils and a clean piece of paper ready, John. If my bank accounts list a beneficiary at my death, is the money in those accounts immediately available to that beneficiary?
The answer is generally yes, and that beneficiary may have to produce a certified death certificate in order to get access to that money. But in general, the answer is yes.
My father passed away 2 weeks ago. I can't find his original will and trust, only copies. Is that a problem? What do I do?
It's a problem. You need to consult a lawyer. There is a basic prohibition against admitting copies of wills to probate. There are some exceptions to that, but if you can't find it, you need to talk to a lawyer that's been down this road before.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been down this road hundreds of times, so that's really important.
Real quick, Carrie, I have a medical power of attorney and the physical one. What do I do with these papers? Do the kids get them? Does a doctor get them? My lawyer has them, but he's as old as I am. So what do we do with these papers that document powers of attorney and whatnot?
Well, I think that for one, you give your medical power of attorney to your doctor. And for two, you want to make sure that the person named as agent under your power of attorneys for health care and property have the originals. Have a minimum a copy, but I would give them the originals. It sounds to me like you trust them and you should give it to them.
I'm sorry we don't have time for any more calls. We have a lot of people waiting on hold. We have a lot of text questions, but that's the way it is when Kerry Peck is here. You can find his office at peckritchie.com, or you can call 312-201-0900. peckritchie.com, 312.
John, send me their texts and calls, and we'll try and get back to them.
That's nice of you, Kerry. Okay, thank you, sir. Let's visit again soon.
Thank you.